Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Over the weekend, Pakistani president and military ruler Pervez Musharraf hit the brakes hard on Pakistani democracy. A state of emergency declared, elections postponed, opposition figures rounded up, and the U.S. State Department plea to stop totally ignored. Musharraf said it had to be done.
With all the facts available to me, consider that inaction at this moment is suicide for Pakistan.
Now, America's frontline ally is a true dictatorship. It's also a nuclear-armed state and a terror hotbed with Al-Qaeda and bin Laden lurking in the shadows. This hour on Point, we're reading Pakistan's state of emergency and what it means. Joining me now from Pakistan's capital, Islamabad, is David Rode, reporter for the New York Times. David, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
What's the latest there on the roundup of opponents of the new state of emergency?
The main development today was that the first real resistance to the government emerged. There were protests led by lawyers in courthouses in several major cities, and in Lahore in particular, and to a lesser extent in Karachi, there were police charges and beatings and arrests of the lawyers. Pretty graphic violence there. There was protest in one university as well, and there's been some new hints from Benazir Bhutto that she may have her party begin to protest as well.
Are there any firm numbers? Pakistani government officials have said maybe 500 rounded up. We're hearing perhaps even thousands. Is it known?
There was one report we're trying to confirm of 1,800 people being detained at this point. The lawyers that protested here in Islamabad today said they already had warrants out for their arrest. They actually encouraged each other to be cautious and not get in a melee with the police here in Islamabad, and that did not happen because they are trying to pace themselves. The leaders of the protests were telling them to not get arrested quickly so that they could keep this up over the long term.
Is it the police or the military or both who are doing the bidding, the work of the new kind of state of emergency regime?
It is the police that are doing all this work, and that's something that the government spokespeople have tried to say, that this isn't distracting from the effort against terrorism because it's just the police. The other development here today is that there's growing concern among Western diplomats that what General Musharraf is doing is actually hurting the effort to combat terrorism here, that this declaration of emergency will not help him combat extremists. It actually may drive popular support against the government and towards extremism.
How are Pakistanis describing the why of this? We'll hear analysis in this hour, but what are they saying to you, David? How are they interpreting why General Musharraf did this and did it now?
There's a fairly widespread, there's a very and completely widespread sense among lawyers and human rights activists and all politicians that this is purely about maintaining his personal power. And then the real question becomes, how is it perceived among average Pakistanis? That's much more difficult to gauge. One of the things that the president has done is block out all independent news broadcasts. That's both the newly independent Pakistani media here, and there's no international news. There's no CNN or BBC anymore. Screens just went blank on Saturday. So it's hard to gauge, but there's a very strong sense, at least among the elite, that this is simply about maintaining his own power, not about terrorism.
Any sense of how long this state of emergency, what the critics there are calling martial law, might last?
It's very unclear at this point. There's conflicting signals from the government. President Musharraf met with Western ambassadors today. He did not commit to a specific time when this would end. He did not commit to a specific date for future elections. And in one telling detail that Western diplomats conveyed to me, he spent the vast majority of the meeting complaining about the country's Supreme Court and explaining why he had to do this, and he did not raise the issue of terrorism until he was asked about it by a Western diplomat.
Now, remind us, the court was about to rule on his very standing as president.
That's correct, and a close aide to his told me yesterday that they were told by a judge on the panel that the ruling was going to be against him, and the court would rule that he was not eligible to be president, and his term would end on November 15th. And once they received that information, they moved ahead with the state of emergency.
You quote Pakistani officials under General Musharraf today saying that they considered the American response, Washington's response so far, muted. And you quote Tariq Azim Khan saying they, that is Washington, would rather have a stable Pakistan, albeit with some restrictive norms, than have more democracy prone to fall in the hands of extremists. Do Musharraf and those around him believe that Washington's basically going to roll over here?
Yes, and I think the central question here is, what is the best form of combating extremism and terrorism? Is it, military rule or is it democracy? The lawyers and human rights groups here are saying that an election would create popular support for a new government with a mandate to counter militancy, and it does seem that there is very little support here for the militants among most sort of middle class and among most poorer Pakistanis. The problem's largely up on the border with Afghanistan, but that's the central debate. Is it wise for the United States to continue backing him? Is military rule the answer, or is it actually making the situation worse?
And how does that debate appear to break down inside Pakistan? Is it just the elite who want democracy? Is there wide backing for Musharraf, or do the lawyers represent a widespread view, the mainstream view, that the Constitution, democracy, and all the rest is more important than his career?
I think the only way we'll know that is in the next few days. And if these lawyers, which is it's now clearly an elite phenomena, you've got lawyers in Pakistan wear suits, these black suits and black ties. Mm-hmm. They're very well dressed compared to average Pakistanis. So it's the educated elite here that's going out and protesting and fighting police. If the numbers grow, that could be an indication of broader support for this push for elections.
David Rode in Islamabad, Pakistan's capital, with the New York Times. Thank you very much for your reporting and for being with us today, David.
Thank you.
Here's President Pervez Musharraf again addressing his country to declaring an emergency rule this weekend.
We are also learning democracy. We are going through a difficult stage. It is the nation which is important. And for me and every Pakistani, Pakistan comes first, and anyone else's considerations come after that.
Joining me now in the studio, two very clued-in Pakistan watchers, Adil Najam, professor at Tufts University's Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy. He's a blogger, columnist for the News International, an English-language daily paper in Pakistan. He just returned from a trip to Pakistan last week. Adil Najam, welcome back to One Point.
Thank you.
And we're very glad to have Hussein Haqqani with us, professor of international relations at Boston University. He served as an advisor to former Pakistani Prime Ministers Benazir Bhutto and Nawaz Sharif, who remain top opposition figures to President Pervez Musharraf. He is Pakistan's former ambassador to Sri Lanka. He's also co-chair of the Hudson Institute's project on the future of the Muslim world and author of Pakistan Between Mosque and Military. Professor Haqqani, welcome back to you as well.
Pleasure being here, Tom.
Let's hear your interpretation first, Hussein Haqqani. Why has this happened? What does it mean?
First of all, this is not the first time that a military commander in Pakistan has claimed that he's acting in the national interest and has basically folded up democracy. It has happened several times before. Musharraf has the unique distinction or the dubious distinction of being the person to do it twice. So in 1999 was the first coup. This is the second coup. He's calling it an emergency. But the Pakistani constitution provides for a state of emergency within the constitution. Mm. He, on the other hand, has suspended the constitution. So this is virtually martial law. And he's done it primarily, as everybody else has pointed out earlier, basically to save himself and his position. He thought that the court would rule against his holding the dual office of military chief and president, and he didn't want that. It's very difficult for him to convince many people that this has anything to do with saving Pakistan from terrorism, because in the last 24 hours, the only people who have been arrested are not terrorists, but lawyers, human rights activists, and political opponents and critics of the regime.
Adil Najam, what does it mean for U.S.-Pakistan relations long-term, then, if the United States' response is indeed, as the Pakistani official we heard quoted said, muted, if the United States sort of, you know, gets along to go along with Musharraf? Yeah.
The response, especially this morning, is less muted than one assumed it would be, but it's still very muted. And in some ways, General Musharraf has been successful in diverting international attention and making this, as he tries to make everything, into something about the war on terror. And as the report kind of suggested, that's a tactic he consistently uses because he realizes that as soon as he can bring up that bogeyman, the issues of democracy will go out of the door. And this rather silly question will come up, do we want stability or democracy? Because he has sort of played his cards in a way of convincing the West, less convincingly now, but telling the West that I'm stability and democracy may not give you that and therefore may not give you results in the war on terror.
But are Pakistanis buying that? David Rhodes says no.
No, I don't think Pakistanis are buying that, and I think the international media world is buying it less and less. The question is how long before U.S. patience with him runs out.
But if it doesn't run out, if the U.S. sticks with him, do we run the risk here of another kind of Shah of Iran situation where Pakistanis look and say, Washington, you supported a dictator when the Constitution was ripped up and thrown out the window?
It's not a question of running the risk. That's what Pakistanis have been saying now for a year. These lawyers on the street, this is not the first time they're being beaten up. I was here on your show the last time they were beaten up. The question is whether anyone in Washington is listening.
We're talking this hour about the state of emergency in volatile Pakistan and what it means. Some call it martial law inside America's frontline war on terror ally. State of emergency declared on Saturday. Late that night, early Sunday morning, Pakistan time, Musharraf, President Musharraf, General, came on Pakistani television, that hadn't been shut down, and said and referenced President Abraham Lincoln's suspension of civil liberties in the American Civil War to justify his move.
I would at this time venture to read out an excerpt of President Abraham Lincoln, especially to all my listeners in the United States. As an idealist, Abraham Lincoln had one consuming passion during that time of supreme crisis, and this was to preserve the Union, because the Union was in danger. Towards that end, he broke laws, he violated the Constitution, he usurped arbitrary power, he trampled individual liberties. His justification was necessity.
Pakistani General and President Pervez Musharraf citing Abraham Lincoln as he brought on a state of emergency, some are calling it martial law, in Pakistan. Hussein Haqqani, is this Pakistan's time of supreme crisis that calls for extreme measures?
Pakistan has had a time of supreme crisis since 1958 when the army first intervened, and every general cites Abraham Lincoln. Pakistan has had 4 military coups, now fifth one under General Musharraf. None of them is an Abraham Lincoln, because Abraham Lincoln was an elected leader. Abraham Lincoln was confronted with a civil war that he did not make. Musharraf has been running Pakistan for 8 years. If there is chaos today in Pakistan, that is of Musharraf's making. And the fact remains that in the last 8 years, he has spent more energy fighting Pakistan's political opposition. He has haunted Mr. Nawaz Sharif. Mm. He has hunted down Ms. Bhutto, kept them both in exile. He has actually focused his energy on fighting Pakistan's moderate middle or center rather than fighting terrorism. So citing Abraham Lincoln is just very cynical, and almost as cynical as almost everything else that Musharraf does.
Adil Najam, many Americans may listen to that history. 4 military coups already in Pakistan. It's not, these are headlines we've seen before, and things somehow rolled on. Is it different this time? Are the stakes different? Is the volatility higher? We heard Joe Biden last week in the Democrats' presidential debate saying, this is the real nightmare tripwire in Pakistan. What? How?
And he was trying to defend Musharraf in that statement.
Yes.
You know, I know a bit about Abe Lincoln, and Pervez Musharraf ain't no Abe Lincoln.
Okay.
Something is different. Something is different. And I think it's positively different. And what's different is I think there is a true and honest democratic movement in Pakistan on the streets. It's not coming from the political parties. It's coming from these lawyers. The reason why he has to keep upping the ante doing one bad thing after the other is because the people keep resisting it, the courts keep resisting it. If you look at what the move is, he's really targeted two forces. He's targeted the independent media, and he's targeted the legal fraternity. Mm-hmm. Those are the two most powerful democratic forces in Pakistan. And over the last 1 year, they have constantly upped the ante on democracy. So I think what has changed is that there is an honest to goodness ground swell of democracy amongst the people of Pakistan. Now, the question is, how is the question framed internationally? Mm. If the international world sees this as being about stability, war on terror, extremism, then in some ways General Musharraf will win because he'll say, I'll give you stability. If the rest of the world says this is about democracy, then you will see these forces, the political parties, the groundswell of public movement, actually demonstrate the democratic spirit of the country.
I wonder, Hossein Haqqani, I'm reading here in the LA Times today, Paul Richter analyzing there, and he says what you've got is something perhaps akin to what we saw in Iran. With the Shah of Iran, 79, the U.S. backed a strongman. When he was eventually washed away, it was clearly not sort of a popular democracy. It was an Islamist revolution in Iran. But Adil Najam seems to suggest if you just get rid of Musharraf, you'll have democratic bliss in Pakistan.
Well, at this point, yes. But if Musharraf is allowed to survive another 10 years, then maybe we will be like Iran. What happened in Iran? All the discontent became religionized. Mm-hmm. Because everybody who was unhappy for economic reasons, social reasons, for political reasons, they all had no choice but to rally around the mosque. If Musharraf finishes off the lawyers, if he finishes off the media, if he finishes off the political parties, then Pakistan will end up where Iran was in 1979. But at this point, let me just say one more thing. Pakistan may not have been able to work democracy in the last 60 years as a newly independent nation. But Pakistan has always had an aspiration for democracy. And the lawyers and the political parties, and political parties in Pakistan have many weaknesses. All politicians all over the world are flawed, and maybe Pakistan's are more flawed than others. But that said, the lawyers, civil society, politicians, they have always resisted authoritarian rule. This time, the difference is that there is a third force at work, and that is religious extremists. Mm-hmm. They control territory. They are launching suicide attacks. If Musharraf...
Taliban, Al-Qaeda, and all the rest.
Yes, and if Musharraf continues to crush Pakistan's broad center, and the United States does not stop him, then we will actually come to a pass where the only thing left in the country may be this violent resistance on the one hand, underground, and Musharraf and the army and an elite governing the country on the other. I agree with Adil that at this point, Musharraf, if he is removed, will be replaced by the broad center, which is liberal, democratic, and which has widespread support, and which really wants to reform Pakistan and move it along a more democratic line.
Now, if it should happen, Adil Najam, what about it if you put civil society, that path, up against the fundamentalists with the Pakistan's military? I don't know if it would, be in some kind of bad attitude, bad posture toward a democratic succession government. But can civil society stand up against the fundamentalist that Musharraf says he's a bulwark against, even though his record's very sketchy on that?
We won't know until we try. There is no such thing as democratic bliss, certainly not in Pakistan. Mm-hmm. Democracy is a messy affair. If you believe in democracy, you agree, you embrace the mess with it. Here's the thing. Look at the last year. Mm-hmm. The extremists have been able to bring out to the street people who will blow themselves up. But the moderate liberal...
Including killing, 180 or so, and wounding Benazir Bhutto came
but,
home.
But the moderate liberal forces, the truly liberal forces, brought a million people to greet Benazir. Mm. They brought these lawyers to the streets in the Chief Justice movement. They made the five-hour trip between Islamabad and Lahore that the Chief Justice took into a 28-hour trip because there were so many people lined up in the street. So the urge to... Democracy is a simple affair. Democracy is the desire to have a say in decisions that affect people's lives. And the people of Pakistan want to have that say. The war on terror gets linked to this in the following way. You will continue losing the war on terror, no matter who's there, whether it's a civilian, a military, or whatever, as long as the people of Pakistan see this as someone else's war.
What about the reputation, the image of the United States now in Pakistan, Hossein Haqqani, before this goes further, but just now as it stands, is it redeemable?
It is redeemable only if the United States is seen as firmly coming behind the forces of democracy. We must understand, Pakistanis have a love-hate relationship with the United States. They like U.S. aid, but they do not like U.S. intervention.
And we've seen 10 or 15 billion since 9/11 poured into this government.
And Tom,
mostly the military.
Mm-hmm. And Pakistan is not only under this government. From 1954, Pakistan has received $21 billion in American aid, $17 billion of which have gone to the military. So if the U.S. says, hey, we backed and created a military which has fought no wars outside and won, but conquered its own nation again and again, we are now going to help build Pakistani civil society, and we will help make Pakistan a democracy, a viable democracy. I think the U.S. image and position and relationship is redeemable.
Let's begin to turn to our listeners. Jaffer is calling from Westboro, Massachusetts. Jaffer, you're on the air.
Yes, I am. Thank you for taking my call.
Certainly.
Well, first of all, I'm sick and tired of this kleptocratic elites, what they call themselves elite. They are nothing but those trash, you know.
Who are you referring to when you say kleptocratic
whoever,
elite?
Mr. Haqqani or the other person, the Adel Nadeem is telling or something you're saying about elites. These people are...
Well, I don't really know. When you say elites, are you talking about Benazir Bhutto's followers, the lawyers who are being beaten up in the streets?
Benazir Bhutto, Sharif, you know, those guys.
The Democrats, the opposition.
I mean, when they were in power, they had the worst record of human violation. Benazir Bhutto spent over $2 million U.S. dollars to arrange her debacle with the rent-a-crowd people, you know, coming.
So is it better? Is Pakistan on a better path with General Musharraf in charge?
I definitely say, and there are a lot of people, and one of the things with the U.S. is we are trying to take those pundits who have been ousted, who has been, let's say, work with those Benazir and Sharif, you know.
But when we asked David Rode with the New York Times in Islamabad what most Pakistanis felt, he also said he believed that they saw this as just self-preservation for Musharraf himself personally.
How many regular Pakistani he talked to? Benazir said she's on self-exile. You know, I'm also on self-exile since 1930s, since 30 years in this country and in Europe. So, but you know, these guys, they come in, plunder the wealth of the country, they go back, they say, oh, we are good. Did you ever ask Benazir, where did he getting money from? From my tax dollar as an American taxpayer.
Jaffer, we hear the line of critique very clearly. Hossein Haqqani, how about it? He says,
well,
this is a corrupt elite, record is bad. Why are you praising it?
You see, the problem is, an elite or not an elite, in the final analysis, the basic principle of democracy is the people know best. And all democratic elites have flaws. American politicians have flaws. The issue is, what system of governance do you have? Unfortunately, there's a set of Pakistanis, and I'm so glad that it's a minority, which is represented by our friend Mr. Jaffer, who basically do not understand or do not like the concept of politics. They think that there is some, you know, they have some engineering solution in their mind, that somehow it'll be fixed. Yes, there will be kleptocrats, there'll be corrupt politicians, there will be corrupt judges, there will be corrupt generals, but what is important is a country has to be run according to a constitution. And this terminology that all politicians are corrupt, everybody is bad, and only the gentleman who's calling is somehow a superior human being, and so is General Musharraf, this psychology has hurt Pakistan. It has divided Pakistan once. Pakistan had an eastern wing, which went because the people who won the election were called by generals and a few people like the caller.
Taking Bangladesh.
These people who supported the generals at that time said, oh, but the people have voted for the wrong guys. Well, whether it's $2 million spent or 5 rupees spent is not relevant. The point is, more than 1 million people, maybe as many as 2 million people, turned up to receive Benazir Bhutto. They're certainly not going to come to receive the caller or, for that matter, to cheer for General Musharraf.
Adil Najam, there is the fear, though, that in a democratic regime, imperfect, as it surely would be, I guess they all are, perhaps more imperfect than most, as you all are saying, things could just spiral entirely out of control in Pakistan. What about it?
They are spiraling out of control right now. Just how much more spiraling can you expect? They are out of control right now. I won't sort of respond to the caller directly, but I've neither worked with Benazir Bhutto nor Nawaz Sharif. I have problems with both of them. But let's assume he's right. let's assume that these lawyers are elites
flawed
and they're wrong
forces.
And there are lots of people for General Musharraf. Well, then give democracy a chance. Have an election. I am not calling for any one particular person. I am essentially saying that by bottling the spirit of the people, we are creating fractures in society that are not good for Pakistan and are not good for the world.
Hussain Haqqani?
When people say that ordinary Pakistanis are with Musharraf, why don't those ordinary Pakistanis vote for Musharraf in a free and fair election? And why doesn't Musharraf actually seek that free and fair election? I think this is more a propaganda line that many military regimes have, that silent the silent vote is with us. Let the people vote.
Let me take a call from Lincoln, Massachusetts. Charlotte, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, Tom.
Hi.
First of all, I'd like to express my support and sympathy to all the Pakistani people. But I would like to say that I'm very pessimistic that the Bush administration will stand up to Musharraf and stand up for democracy, because as your guests have pointed out, Musharraf has torn up the Constitution, but so has Bush. It seems very unlikely that he will stand up to Musharraf. And the state of emergency that is now in Pakistan, I would really recommend that your listeners check out on the web the Civilian Inmate Labor Program over here, because then they might realize that this could happen in America and quite soon.
Charlotte, thank you for your call. Adil Najam, Condoleezza Rice in Jerusalem saying, you know, we have to look over the situation with aid. So much aid goes to Pakistan. But she said three times that President Bush's first concern was, quote, to protect America and protect American citizens by continuing to fight against terrorists. Implication being Musharraf will do that, despite that such a checkered record.
I'm not going to comment on the second part of the caller's question, but my worry is that the U.S. might again try to play Pakistan as if it's a board game. And Condoleezza Rice's statement, I do not think, was very well worded. Essentially what she's saying is, if you don't play our game, we have other options. And that's really what irks the Pakistani public, that the U.S. is trying to figure out
Who doesn't play the U.S. game?
We have Musharraf doesn't. And essentially, I think she was talking more about Benazir Bhutto and sort of the recent sort of talks about deals and stuff. I don't want George Bush to deal with Musharraf. It's not his business to deal with Musharraf. It's the Pakistani people's. I want the U.S. to step aside and say, we are not going to be a hurdle in the way of democracy. Because if anyone in the Pakistan is more unpopular today than Pervez Musharraf, it's the United States. So any attempt by the United States to anoint someone will automatically make life difficult for that someone.
Hussain Haqqani, I know we have to let you go in a minute. Your final thought.
I don't think that the U.S. wants to anoint anyone. I think that as a major aid donor, as the principal supporter of the military of Pakistan, if the United States has made an effort to try and get the military to start talking to civilian politicians whom the military had exiled, I think that is not necessarily a negative thing unless it brings a negative outcome. I think in the final analysis, if Benazir Bhutto or Nawaz Sharif come back and run for election and get the people's vote, that scenario is a pro-democracy scenario. Condi Rice is not saying that Bush should Musharraf should step aside and make Benazir Bhutto prime minister tomorrow without an election. So I think that we sometimes read too much. And because the Bush administration is quite sort of, a lot of people feel very strongly about it. Even when they try to do some good, it comes in for criticism. I think on this particular point, I think the Bush administration has started showing spine. Let's hope that that lasts and they really stand up to Musharraf and say, you know what? This is unacceptable. You have made certain commitments to your international partners. You have made certain commitments to your people. You have to abide by them. And in the final analysis, Adil is right. The fate of Pakistan has to be determined by Pakistan's people in a free and fair election. As long as the U.S. calls for a free and fair election, the U.S. is okay.
Hussain Haqqani, Director of the Center for International Relations at Boston University, thank you for joining us. Talking this hour about a state of emergency in volatile Pakistan. Some call it martial law inside America's frontline war on terror ally. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice responded to the news from Pakistan this weekend by saying the U.S. would review its giant aid package to Pakistan. She spoke in Jerusalem.
The United States does not support and communicated to the Pakistani leadership prior to this action that it would not support extra constitutional means. I think the issue now is that it is in the best interest of Pakistan and the best interest of the Pakistani people for there to be a prompt return to a constitutional course, for there to be an affirmation that elections will be held for a new parliament, and for all parties to act with restraint in what is obviously a very difficult situation.
Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice in Jerusalem, former Prime Minister of Pakistan Benazir Bhutto, who has returned from exile to lead her opposition party, spoke with NPR yesterday. She addressed President Musharraf's claim that the Pakistan's Supreme Court had released known terrorists and was not acting in the best interests of the country.
I don't understand why the entire constitution has to be suspended or the elections postponed because General Musharraf is unhappy with the actions of certain judges in the Supreme Court. The parliament was there. General Musharraf could have gone to the parliament. He could have asked the political parties over. There are moderate political parties who oppose terrorism. If there was a problem with the court freeing terrorists, as is being spun now, then there were other constitutional and political solutions available.
Benazir Bhutto speaking with NPR after the declaration of a state of emergency in Pakistan. We've been joined in this hour by Adil Najam, professor at Tufts University's Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy, just back from Pakistan last week. We're joined right now from Washington, D.C. by Anthony Cordesman, chair in strategy at the Center for Strategic and International Studies in Washington, former national security assistant to Senator John McCain on the Senate Armed Services Committee, author of Salvaging American Defense. Anthony Cordesman, thank you very much for joining us.
Tom, a pleasure.
Please look at the strategics and security implications, if you would, of this weekend's developments in Pakistan for the United States, for the region.
Well, I think several aspects are deeply disturbing. When you look at the declaration, it or state of emergency, most of it deals essentially with domestic legal issues, and I gather what was the Supreme Court's notice that it would not approve Musharraf staying on as president, mm-hmm. and very little deals with extremism. It comes at a time when, at least over the last few months, the Pakistani army has performed very, very poorly in the tribal agencies. You've seen a very steady growth in Taliban and Al-Qaeda influence. They've been able to expand out into the Swat Valley, and while there have been occasional defeats of the Taliban and Al-Qaeda, one of the striking things is that usually conventional armies tend to win the tactical battles but lose the struggle for control of space mm-hmm. and political influence. As nearly as we can figure out, the Pakistani army only won about 1 in 3 to 1 in 5 of these clashes. And there are strong indications that the moment this state of emergency was declared, basically all operations began to halt. This is scarcely the kind of step that's going to do much to bring security and deal with the problems in Afghanistan, and it certainly isn't the kind of step that's going to make the Pakistani army a more stable force in the country.
The presumption is that very likely Osama bin Laden is still in those tribal territories you talked about in Pakistan, that this is a base of operations, again, for both Al-Qaeda and the Taliban. That, of course, is of big interest to Washington. But if Musharraf's government is doing so poorly on the military front, both tactically and in terms of hearts and minds, why this, what appears to be, fairly firm U.S. commitment to Musharraf anyway?
I think a lot of it has been that even if it has not been, shall we say, an outstanding campaign or even a very consistent and dedicated one, aid does ensure that you do not get open tolerance of the Taliban. You do not get a nation which would simply turn a blind eye. And Pakistan has made efforts along the border. It has deployed nearly 100,000 troops. The Pakistani army is not well trained and equipped for counterinsurgency. It's trained to fight India. But at least there has been some presence and an effort to deal with these issues. But it's certainly true that we spent nearly $11 billion on aid, most of it military. That's about $150 million a month. Mm. And almost all of that aid has gone to buy Pakistan major weapons systems, or has sort of just moved into the military without being aid that you can clearly tie to counterinsurgency or counterterrorism.
Do you see a belief in Washington that if one of the opponents of Musharraf, let's say Benazir Bhutto or Nawaz Sharif, came in, were elected in a democratic procedure, presumably Pakistan would remain open to military aid in that circumstance? Does Washington think that somehow, despite all of its shortcomings so far in its effort, its response to an extremist threat, a fundamentalist threat, would be even worse in a democratic system?
I don't think anyone believes it would be worse in a democratic system, but everything here would depend on what the army actually did. The question is not whether you could have potentially a democratic leader come to power for a while. It's whether they could stay in power, and that would depend on restraint in the army. And one of the potential risks here is that if Musharraf falls, many of the people around him, who have been often very moderate, very pragmatic, non-Islamist officers, might go with him. And there's no question there's been a significant Islamist presence within the Pakistani army. And, well, there have been claims that these officers have been pushed out. The truth is that this has been an effort which has perhaps gotten worse, rid of the worst Islamists, the ones that are most radical and anti-Musharraf, but it scarcely made the army secure.
Adil Najam, let me put that to you. If Musharraf should go and take some more secular-tinged military elements with him, might a democratic successor face an Islamist intelligence service and military in Pakistan? Might you indeed have an open split between military and executive there?
I don't think so. I really don't think so. I think that's what General Musharraf would like us to believe, because then that's an argument for him to stay. I think looking at the efforts against the extremists and these local Taliban, as they're called, are a far bigger problem than Al-Qaeda now. That's what's happening in Swat, these homebred Taliban, if you will. That is not just a military question, it is a political question. What you're asking people to do is to fight a war against their own people. And you're asking them to fight a war that they don't think is their own war. What you need is a political solution, a government who is able to convince the people of Pakistan that this terrorism, this extremism, is a war against Pakistan rather than a mercenary operation that we are doing for $11 billion or whatever.
On behalf of the United States.
On behalf of someone else. Because what you've been seeing is no one is willing to fight the war. Even the military soldiers aren't willing to fight the war because, you know, if you want to learn something from Abe Lincoln, this is what you learn. When you have to fight a war against your own people, you'd better have an argument that really makes sense to your own people. And that's where Musharraf's fault in the war on terror is not that he's not tried hard enough. I think he's tried everything he could. His problem in the war on terror, his fault in the war on terror, is he has failed miserably. He's not even tried to convince the Pakistani public that this is our battle, this is our war.
Anthony Cordesman, what about it? The domestic ambivalence in Pakistan toward the war on terror, how does that dynamic figure in here?
Well, the public opinion polls, and one always has to have reservations about them, indicate that Pakistani opinion is certainly not supporting the U.S. It is not supporting the concept of a global war on terror. When Pakistanis were asked, would they support efforts to control Islamic extremism, the answer was yes. But understand that Pakistan faces many more problems than what's happening in the tribal agencies and in the Northwest. It faces problems with the Baluchs. It faces internal problems. It has the problems of India and Kashmir. And when the polls broke out data that did cover what could be pulled in the tribal agencies, and the data are certainly weak, the tribal agencies were far more sympathetic to the Taliban and to the Pashtun cause than the rest of Pakistan. I don't think it's true that the Pakistani army has been fully committed. It has occasionally been committed. When it has been committed, the truth is it hasn't performed well. Again, it's not trained or equipped for this mission, and it gets very, very little popular support. And I think almost regardless of the government, there's going to be a major problem in trying to get a Pakistani force to really fight and be effective in the tribal agencies.
The agencies which have hosted Taliban and Al-Qaeda over time. Let me take a call from Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Loki, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. I got a question. I'm a little confused about the United States policy. I'm from Africa, and I have been studying here, international study. I'm going back home. And when you go back home, they ask you what democracy means. So I don't know what democracy in the United States diplomacy, because when those things happen in Pakistan and the United States don't stand about the right thing, it's just going to create more terrorists against the United States. You're not going to solve the problem. So the United States have to stand about the right thing, not say 1+1=2 for Musharraf and 1+1=3 for the people they don't like it. That's not right.
Loki, so, you raise a big point, and let me put it to Anthony Cordesman. Anthony Cordesman, what about it? Here's an African student studying in the United States. He says when he goes home, they're going to ask him, what is democracy? He's saying if you don't have a pro-democracy stance, honestly, clearly, in your diplomacy, that there are wider ramifications here for the way people look at U.S. and U.S. interests.
Well, first, the United States did make a major effort to bring Prime Minister Bhutto back. It did successfully halt one previous declaration of emergency. It is not a coincidence that the timing of this declaration came over the weekend and came at a time when they were hoping the U.S. reaction would be limited, but first Secretary Gates, the Secretary of Defense, and then Secretary Rice, and now President Bush have all made it very clear that what they want is a democratic government. They don't want a military coup. They do not support this. Now, one problem we are always going to face is supporting democracy is a major objective. It isn't the only objective. And you can't treat every foreign country on the basis that if you don't instantly become a democracy, we won't deal with you.
Adil Najam, has Washington made it abundantly clear that they want a democratic government in Pakistan?
No, not at all. Certainly not to the Pakistani people. What Washington has said is we will tolerate democracy in Pakistan as long as you can get us someone we can work with. And for the last 7 years, it was Musharraf, and now they're saying we are willing to work with Benazir too. In some ways, the U.S. support for Benazir has hurt her in terms of support in Pakistan. And that's the anointing thing.
But you can't have it both ways. I mean, if the U.S. has so supported her that it's hurt her, that would suggest that it has indeed supported her.
It has supported her. I think, you know, Benazir came back to Pakistan. A week before that, Nawaz Sharif tried to come to Pakistan. The general stopped him. The U.S. said nothing. So the point is that the world and the African gentleman is exactly correct. The world does not buy the U.S. argument when it says we are for democracy. And that's a really sad, sad thing, since Abe Lincoln is the theme of the day for the U.S. Pakistanis do not buy that the U.S. is for democracy in Pakistan. Look at all the news editorials and stuff. And they keep asking the question, can we trust Musharraf? Can we trust Benazir?
American editorials,
commentators. They don't. No one is saying, can we trust Pakistan? In some ways, we've resigned to the fact that we need someone to manage this country for us. There's sort of this colonial mentality. Now, that may be a false perception on my part, but that's a perception many Pakistanis have. What the U.S. needs to do, I think, is to very clearly say, it doesn't matter who's there, we are for democracy. That would be a good message to send to Pakistan. It would be a good message to send to the Muslim world. And only a really democratic, meaning a government that has public support, will be able to ever fight this war on terror, because it is not going to be fought by a mercenary army.
Anthony Cordesman, last week in the Democratic debate, Joe Biden and others were pointing at very dire threats out of Pakistan that they, in that debate, were saying could be unleashed by U.S. action in Iran. But what about the big strategic picture here? You've got a nuclear-armed country. It is a base for international terrorism still. With these developments, do you see things on a good course? And if it's not, where should the U.S. lean, just in strategic terms, to improve the situation?
Well, I think in strategic terms, it's quite clear that you have a dilemma. You are fighting a war in Afghanistan. You are dealing with a tribal enclave or group of tribal agencies, which are not part of the mainstream of Pakistani politics. At the same time, it is very important that you do not end up with a military coup or a hostile military dictatorship, that Pakistan does move back to democracy. Strategically, you can say that you have here different conflicting objectives, which is true in many areas. Mm-hmm. I think when it comes down to the Iran case, there is perhaps a great deal more domestic politics in citing this worst case than the immediate prospect of any kind of U.S. conflict in Iran. This is much more not the U.S. fighting Iran, but Democratic candidates fighting each other. And perhaps that is one of the few aspects of this which eases the situation. What I cannot see is that there's any easy answer in Pakistan or Afghanistan. And certainly backing Musharraf, if he ends up alienating, as he already seems to have done, most of the people isn't going to serve the cause of fighting terrorism. It's going to aid it.
Anthony Cordesman at the Center for Strategic and International Studies in Washington, thank you very much for joining us for a few minutes today.
Thank you.
Adil Najam, final thoughts here. Anthony Cordesman raises the prospect that if you push too hard, you may not get democracy, but rather a hostile military government, hostile to the U.S. interest in Pakistan as well.
I'm not convinced of that either. One of the things that General Musharraf did a few weeks ago is he replaced the entire second string of military leadership on the assumption that he would give up the uniform and placed a number of people who are clearly liberal, who are clearly very interested in continuing with the same policy on the war on terror. I think what the U.S. needs to do is to clearly de-link the question of war on terror with the question from democracy. No matter who is there, we'll fight the war if we support them.
Adil Najam with the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy, thank you for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.